Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Hey America, I'm Chad Pagano. I'm a former Army sniper, a chef instructor at the Institute of Culinary Education, and an avid lifelong hunter, and you're about to experience the Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth, airing live on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm joined, as usual, by my guest, Mike Schwartz. Correction, sorry to offend you. My co-host, Mike Schwartz, mastermind behind Bao Food and Drinks and some kind of weird food incubator.
I think I'd rather be your guest. I don't know if I want to be that closely associated with you.
Yeah, really, when the NSA comes in and... Does the NSA actually come in, or do they send out the Gestapo, I guess, right? Like the FBI or Homeland.
That's exactly my point.
Right.
Your guest. His guest.
Yeah, so he's my longstanding guest who's here every Tuesday at 11 o'clock with me lately. Mike Schwartz, he runs a food incubator in Long Island City. It's a really cool concept. Basically, you come in, he's all set up for you. You run your business right out of his business, and it's kind of... very much like almost like a collective in some ways. You know, you're supporting these local businesses, and we were talking about that. And that's what I really want to talk about today a little bit, and put the twist of hunting and gathering kind of in the mix. Let me find my highlight here. It's funny because when I started, or we started the show last week, and then this idea of community or collectivism came up in our conversation. I said, let's talk about that next week. And then I kind of started doing my research, and nothing really jumped out at me on how we could get away with this. So, and I don't want to make it some like spiritual idea crap, metaphorically, we should all share food. And, you know, I don't want to sound like a
communist.
A freaking communist at the end of the day when I started, because I'm not, you know, earn your food, go out and get it. But you know what? Trading is certainly not communism. You know, a fair trade is really what America is about.
Absolutely.
You know, if I provide you with something and you provide me something of equal value and we shake hands, that's what men do. That's what men are supposed to do. So, you know, for me, you may have thought the days of like this idea of foraging and hunting are gone, right? 8,000 years old or whatever. And we'll talk about that. Mesopotamia, Iraq, where this idea of farming began, and they messed it all up there. See, that's what started. The Iraqis start everything. They start all the trouble. It's the Middle East, right? They had this beautiful system. Or did we screw it up?
Well, I'm not sure.
They're probably screwed up, talking about farming in
general. We certainly didn't help it.
But this idea of foraging and hunting for your food, you know, it's kind of an ancient idea. No one really does it anymore. You know, the idea is that the big companies are going to supply you with the food. You just got to have money. So you could get a job that has nothing to do with food, earn your money, right, and then go to the supermarket and buy your food. And basically this keeps our economy rolling as far as food's concerned. You have a job because you got to buy food. You buy food that keeps people employed who work on the farm and slaughter animals. And package so-called food, and all these people stay employed. So it's a big revolving door at the end of the day. But I think, you know, for me, it's the backlash against, what are we calling it, processed food?
Industrialization.
Yeah. Shit food. Crap food. This non-food that they put in bags and jars and cans and try to sell to us is what makes it... has really brought this idea, I think I'm going to use the term, back into vogue. You know, and people use different terms to describe this idea, you know, but basically it's supporting these smaller local companies that are trying to do the right thing by the customer, and that might mean simply just providing you with the best, freshest, cleanest ingredients that they could get their hands on and then pass on to their customers. And so, you know, that's really what I want to focus on today. And then I know my co-host, did you hear that, NSA? Co-host. I'm going to try to say NSA as many times as possible today. I wonder if they're monitoring internet radio, because they're monitoring our emails and texts and everything else. They got to be, right?
Yeah.
And let's talk about stuff that will key them, because I know they have a big computer, right? And they just filter everything through there and they look for keywords, maybe?
You've hit quite a few of them today, I think, already.
Right. So I'm going to say, I would like to start a revolution and bring back the ice cream bomb as a dessert, right? That might work.
That might work.
So now they're like, doot, 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 doot. Brooklyn, there's a little dot.
I think I see the drone up there.
Yeah. Roberta, if this place blows up by a drone strike, I am in no way held responsible for that. That is the actions of the federal government. Evan, you're involved now. Don't stop looking over here. Evan is our producer today, and he is totally involved. He knew about this show from the beginning. I'm only kidding. Evan went to Harvard, and he's a good boy, and he's working hard in that. He has nothing to do with this government.
You're scaring me now.
I am. I'm a little crazy today. So, people have evolved beyond hunting and gathering for food and substance. Farming is the way we go now, you know. And the idea of substance farming, is that what you would call it? Substance farming? Like, you know, the idea that we would plant a garden in our backyard, right? And it would be for our family, for us, right, for our friends and neighbors. Really, I know it exists on a small scale, even here in Brooklyn, right? People have gardens on the roofs. It's all good. But really, it doesn't exist in the country anymore. No one's really sustaining.
Most people don't have their own gardens anymore.
Right.
I remember when I was a little kid, my mom, we had a garden in the backyard every year.
Right. But I still do, but it's not enough. I don't have enough property. You know, I grow tomatoes. I got some. I'm Italian. I got tomatoes, zucchini, some peppers, eggplant, you know. But it's never
a meatball tree.
Yeah. They have those?
Yeah.
Oh, man. I make my own meatballs. I'm a proud Italian. So it's not enough. I still have to go and buy vegetables at the end of the day. And I want variations. You know, I want to change it up. So this idea really doesn't exist anymore as a whole. So my question to you as my co-host is how? How do we do this? How do we start the movement? Or how do we push the movement forward that's already begun, really? You know, do we set up a building? Do we buy a building?
There are buildings, right? Okay. So on top of the Brooklyn Navy Yard, there's the largest rooftop garden in the world is there. Brooklyn Grange runs it. And they also have, Brooklyn Grange has another rooftop garden in Long Island City in Queens, about 6 blocks from where my place is.
Wow.
And they sell all their products through CSAs, which is community shared agriculture.
Right.
So you can get in on that and get some, if you can't do it on your own roof or your own small plot of land, you can get something from them.
Right.
And there's a lot of markets around now and it's growing. It's a little hard to do in New York City unless you know, because nobody has a yard, but, you know, I think it's growing. And then we talked about last week about sharing. So maybe you don't like to garden, but your neighbor does. So your neighbor grows all your extra tomatoes and GMO-free corn and all kinds of good stuff, and then you go hunting, and then you trade off.
Right, right. So that's the simplicity of this plan.
That's the easiest plan, yeah.
It's beautiful. But you know what it requires? It requires, first of all, people to be social.
It requires that you talk to your neighbor.
You have to talk to your neighbor, and you have to say, hey, I notice you have a garden over there. You're growing some GMO-free corn. I would really like to get my hands on that. I have venison in my freezer. And really, you know, this sounds like some crazy idea, right? Ooh.
Yeah. We do it in the incubator all the time. The owner of Luli Tonics, which is a local juice company that works in my space, the owner loves our kombucha and our little energy shots. So we trade her probiotic energy shots for some of her smoothies, and it's a great deal.
Yeah, no,
yeah,
that's...
it's perfect.
That is perfect. Yeah. And that's... is that legal?
Totally.
Totally.
I don't know.
absolutely legal. Side disclaimer, he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about.
I'm not a lawyer. I'm a cook.
Very good. Fair enough. So we, you know, we don't know if it's legal, so do it on the low. NSA, I'm only kidding. We'd never do anything like that. No, but it brings up the point that, you know, we started this whole idea. You know, we both worked in restaurants, and we've both told our stories about, you know, the guy coming to the back door with something, you know, something fresh, something out of the woods. And that could be a venison. You know, it could be a deer.
It could be a bag of mussrooms.
It could be clams, mussels, some shellfish of some sort. And guess what? We've used it, right?
Absolutely.
In the restaurant. And it was a good thing. It was, you know, it benefited the man going out there doing the work, or the woman going out there doing the work, gathering this stuff in some manner. It benefited you as the chef to have this fresh, wonderful ingredient, and it benefited your customer who got to enjoy the harvest as it is, you know, that we got naturally. Unfortunately, in most places, I don't know about other states or in New York City, I could speak to Long Island, that is completely illegal. If you do that, you are breaking the law. If someone comes to the back door with a side of venison,
it's illegal.
With meat.
Yeah.
Oh, not vegetables?
I can't imagine. I don't know. I think they're worried about meat because they're worried about some kind of contamination.
Though. Right.
I mean.
Right. Which again brings up the, you know, we were chatting before the show and I was saying, well, it's none of the government's business. It's
personal
between
responsibility.
Personal, not to sound Republican here. But it's personal responsibility, really. And ultimately, it would rest, no matter what the law says, to me, on the chef of that restaurant, of the person receiving it and looking at it, inspecting it, cooking it, and ensuring that it's safe. Guess what? The hunter may not know he shot the deer. You're going to look for signs of freshness and you know, making sure that meat's not contaminated in some way. But on top of that, I would say, I would feel safer eating wild game brought to the back of the restaurant from a hunter than I would, you know, getting my meat from some farm.
Box beef, factory farm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you have a better chance eating a wild game. I've been eating wild game my whole life and I've never been sick in my life.
Well, that all depends on how you define sick.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe I had a bellyache. Mentally, you think it's getting to me mentally. Maybe. That'll be next week's show. How wild game makes you hate your government.
Loony.
So, you know, I want to be able to be the central point for kicking this whole revolution off in some ways. So I am going to just be the voice of this. Mike's going to be the brains of it.
Oh, no.
Because he's not busy enough. He only runs two businesses and sits on the New York City Council for better local businesses or something. I'm busy hunting. I don't have time for all this, you know, the legality of it, we'll call it. But, you know, really, this could make us, you know, as we were saying last week, you know, we pointed out it doesn't really take a lot to go out and get your own food. I mean, I know we're all busy, but, you know, so we're talking about really, you know, almost a lifestyle change in some ways.
But, or if you just did it, started it off as a hobby and did it once in a while.
Yep.
And then you let it grow organically and you start to, maybe you find out that you like it and, you know, you go out with your bow and arrow and you actually don't like hunting so much, but you find some really cool berries that you like to collect and then you can be the forager guy.
Right. Right, and it's kind of revolutionary in a way, this whole concept, because when we think about the history of this hunting and gathering, let's just, you could go way back, right? We already said Iraq, you know, any culture were initially hunters and gatherers before they started farming, right? So in the Middle East, they started farming, and it branched from there, and then next thing you know, Asia, they're growing rice. In
Europe,
they're growing wheat. Yep. Wheat-based. Here, we're growing vegetable, corn, right? So let's go with the Native Americans, right? The Native Americans were hunters and gatherers. And then eventually, they decided, wait a second, we could stay here. Look at this place.
Well, I think they were bullied into it.
You think?
Yeah.
In the Pacific Northwest, I thought they... Because my whole concept is they decided to do it. Because they said, look, we got soil. Bullied into hunting and gathering.
No, bullying into staying in one place.
Huh. No, don't stop me with that. That the staying in one place, certain tribes were nomadic. Other tribes stayed in one place. So just hear me out here for 1 second, then we're going to take a break. They found a place that was beautiful. They had waterfall. They had fresh water. They had rich soil. They had woods with deer. They had everything. So they decided, let's just stay here. But then they realized, oh, we're running out of mushrooms in this area. Why don't we plant corn? Or why don't we do another vegetable? And then they started farming. And this, they thought, was benefiting their tribe, right? Because now they're staying local. They have more time to basically relax and be human, right? And they could say, instead of us just spreading out and finding food and bringing it all together, now we can grow our own food in some ways, right? So they start growing food. The problem with that was, first of all, it started basically a chain of command that didn't exist prior. When they were hunters and gatherers, the hunters went out, and maybe the hunters had a little more power because everyone wanted a little meat, right? So they went out and they hunted. But the women and children went out and gathered the forage, right? The mushrooms, whatever it may be, from the woods. And they brought it all together. And there was no real, there might have been a chief or something like that. There was no real problem. But now they plant the garden. There's got to be in charge. There's got to be a manufacturing guy. There's got to be a guy in charge of the farming. And then he would start doling out how much corn you got to each family. And then that became a problem because the hunters got more than the family that went out and got the mushrooms. And it all deteriorated. I hate to sum it up this way and this quickly, but it all deteriorated from there. And that's basically our farming community now, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, it's now the farms are held by a few very large corporations.
Right. And they have all the power.
And they have all the power.
And the little man who wants
control the food, control the people.
Right. And when we come back from the break, I want to pick Mike's brain about this idea that, you know, I want to buy 900 acres in Pennsylvania and plant my own farm. You know, sounds good, right? Seems reasonable. Seems like a reasonable idea that should be pretty easy to execute. But I want to talk about how the government, for the most part, whether it be local government, federal government, state government, I don't care, kind of interferes with that idea and kind of pushes the little man out of the market as far as farming, dairy products, meat is concerned. So let's take a short break, and we'll be right back with the Wild Game Domain on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to The Great Hereafter by Hard Bodies on heritageradionetwork.org.
Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture-raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
Welcome back. I'm your host, Chad Pagano. I'm here with my co-host, Mike Schwartz. And you're listening to the Wild Game Domain on Heritage Radio. So I was telling Mike my business plan. He's a businessman. I wrote this business plan about 8 minutes ago. So I want to run it by the big shot businessman. I want to buy 900 acres in Pennsylvania. It's the independent state, so it still has some freedoms as compared to New York. And I want to start a dairy farm. We're going to buy, what kind of sheep?
We're going to have sheep's milk?
Yeah, sheep's milk.
All right.
I want to do sheep's milk. So I'm going to go to Europe, I guess. No, I'm going to go to Vermont. by sheep.
Sounds good.
All right, some kind of sheep that produce milk. Put them on my farm. And then, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to put up a sign in town, and I'm going to start tweeting about raw, unpasteurized milk, man. It's what the Indians drank, and they were fine. That's what people drank for thousands of years. It was okay. It's what you're serving. That iced tea you serve is unpasteurized.
Raw. Yep.
So why can't I do it?
Nope.
Why?
Oh, because the government's involved.
The government's involved because it's bad for you. Because who said? The FDA, I guess?
Yep. The FDA.
The FDA regulates that. So they say
no. U.S. Department of Agriculture, I think.
Okay.
Probably. But between the two of them, yeah.
Between the two of them. They probably sent emails between the two of them about it and said, no, 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 we can't allow that. People in the United States of America are too stupid to go to a nice farm and buy raw milk. They'll kill themselves, and they'll kill the old people, and they'll kill the babies if we let people do this. It's the ignorance of the American people will not allow
us. They need to be protected from themselves.
Right. We're protecting them. We're protecting you. Oh, thank you, government. Thank you, government. Never mind that raw milk, right,
yep,
is proven to be more beneficial,
yep,
than pasteurized.
Absolutely.
By pasteurizing the milk, correct me if I'm wrong, first of all, we're just totally demolishing the structure of the milk,
mm-hmm,
right? As far as the vitamin content, all that, right? I'm not a scientist, I'm a dumb chef. I don't quite understand all that. We're rendering the vitamins in the milk less effective.
Right.
Less easily absorbed by the body.
That's why it has to be fortified.
That's why they fortify it on top
afterwards
of it.
Afterwards.
Which is another example of the government making a rule and then deciding, hey, instead of going backwards and saying we made a mistake, let's just add another thing on top of it. So now all milk's got to be fortified.
Let's put some artificial chemical vitamins in there.
Right, when it was fine to begin with, when I could drink it out of the cow and it'd be fine. And the other problem with
that would be a funny picture.
I would do it. I would do it. I wish we had – we should get it. Evan, talk to the big shots. Tell them I want a TV show. Because we need visual aids here. Because I would bring a cow in here and I would drink from the udder. I would. And I would prove to you that it's okay. I mean, I would use bleach wipes to wipe down the special part.
Yeah, I'd watch that show.
Yeah, of course you would. That would be good TV. I'm made for TV. All right, but let's get a little more serious now. So that's the first part. It's just not as healthy for you. You know, the vitamins, minerals.
Right, but the regulation is there so that you can have industrial farms, because on a small family farm, the animals are clean, the animals forage, they walk around, they have a lot of land, and they know not to take care of business in the same place that they eat, so they're not sick, and they eat the thing that they're supposed to eat naturally, and they eat grass, and they're healthy, and then the milk is healthy. But then when you pack them down into one of these industrial farms, where they stand around in their own excrement, and they, you know, eat an unhealthy diet, and they're fed lots of antibiotics, then the milk that comes out isn't healthy. And so if you were to drink that raw,
right,
then if you would drink milk from a Land O'Lakes farm that's been – the cows have been given bovine growth hormone, and they're all polluted, then you're going to get sick for sure. But if you could find a small family farm like Chad's farm in Bucks County, Pennsylvania, then – you know, where the sheep get to graze and they're healthy, that's a completely different story.
Right.
It's not even the same product.
And so let's just stick with that. I wish we had more time, because then we could go into other products. We could go into, never mind the meat industry in this country, which is disgusting at best. But this idea that if you could drink this raw milk, right, from birth, really,
right,
you would be a healthier person.
A stronger immune system
based, yep, on the probiotic nature of this raw milk that the government has decided we need to destroy before you drink it, right? Which would in turn allow for less antibiotics to be used in,
yep,
general,
yep,
in society. Never mind my kids going to the doctor every time. Emma's got a sniffle. Let's bring her to the doctor, right? It's a responsible thing to do. Bring it to the doctor. All right, we're not sure, but let's give her some antibiotics. I'm like,
just in case.
Just in case. You never know. It could be meningitis. So let's give her antibiotics. Fight it off. And you know what my wife does? My wife says to me every time, should we give her? I know how you feel about antibiotics. Like, I'm going to be the guy that says,
no.
No. I don't want my kid.
Dr. Chad.
Right. I'm a dumb chef. I'm a dumb hunter. I'm not a doctor. So I say, okay, Dr. Forgione said, let's give her antibiotics. So let's give her antibiotics. And it's, you can't win the battle. If I say no and then she gets something, right, I'm a monster.
Yep.
But you know what? If the government wasn't involved from the beginning, we probably wouldn't be as sick as much. We wouldn't be going to the doctor. We wouldn't be destroying our immune system through throwing all these antibiotics in. Never mind the antibiotics we find in our food from the companies, you know, the cows sitting in their own filth that we just mentioned are sick. So instead of the government saying, well, now wait a second, these animals are getting sick because they're standing in their own shit, right?
You've said it.
Eating their own shit and they're making themselves sick. Why don't we spread them out? Why don't we make a regulation that says you cannot own a cow? Every cow needs an acre or whatever. I'm not a cow farmer. Whatever a cow needs to be healthy and happy, right? Instead of making that regulation, they regulate, well, if you have a sick cow, it's okay. Just
pump them full of antibiotics. They just put the antibiotics in the food just in case.
Right. Right, just in case. Because first of all,
They might get sick.
They might get
sick. That's like putting, what's your daughter's name?
One of them is Emma.
Emma. That's like putting Emma on antibiotics just in case because she's going to school tomorrow. And some of the kids there might be sick, so let's give Emma antibiotics.
Well, that's basically what they do. She goes in with a sniffle, and let's give it to her just in case. She's in school, right? She's going to meet sick kids. And it's this train that we can't get off of now. And the only way to break that is to go back to what we were talking about.
Right.
A little bit. Support these local businesses. Try to get more involved and try to be more social and try to establish a – I don't want to call it a society. I don't want to use the lame-ass term collective either. Right? Collective?
Yeah.
It's so hippie.
Yeah.
Collective. It's just a group of people. What happened to that? Just a group of people. Friends. There it is.
There it is.
Find some friends and trade with them. You know your friend you make fun of? My wife has a friend. She makes sweaters. You know what I did? My
there
first response to it was not, oh, how cool. You know what my ignorant response was? You make sweaters, they're so goofy. But you know what? That's wrong.
You should trade her a sweater for a side of venison.
For a side of venison, right? That's a little, they're not that nice. I'll give her a little
bit. Give her the ossobuco.
Yeah, some stew meat or something, you know. But, you know, the point is, it goes beyond food. Yeah, trading food for food is nice.
Yeah.
But what if you could get a sweater? A hat. You need a hat, right? And for all you fashion-minded people, I'm fashion-minded, Mike. Look at me.
Unbelievable.
I got gray jeans
incredibly
on.
Hip.
I'm wearing gray jeans today. How fashion-forward is that? I got Red Wing boots. I got an L.L. Bean, what is it called, fleece on. I don't even know. My shirt's J. Crew or something. So I get it. My wife dresses me, so I got to. But you know what? If I could trade some venison for a nice handcrafted wool hat, I would wear that.
What do you do with the skins? You should find somebody that can turn those skins into jackets.
Another point. I'm sitting here preaching about sustainability and using and eating what you kill. More than that, that animal is good for so many things.
Yeah.
And if anybody is out there and they want to contact me about using parts of the animal that I normally throw away. We were just talking about I was away this weekend, and one of the guys I was away with, a friend of mine, it works sanitation in my local town. And he was like, hey, what do you do with the deer carcasses? And I said, I don't want to tell you. And he said, no, come on, tell me. I said, throw it in a bag and throw it in the garbage. You take them. And he was like, oh, I don't know if that's legal. I'm like, why not? You could throw away chicken bones. You could throw away raw, right? If I buy chicken at the store and don't cook it, I could throw it away. I said, so I just throw it away. But there's all those bones.
Cook them down.
Yeah.
Make a broth.
A broth.
Unbelievably. And you give that to Emma instead of the antibiotics.
There you go.
Cook the broth for about 10 hours.
I'm going to be discussing with Mike evolving this because I think it would be another – again, he's got to do all the work, you know, just to throw it out there. I'm just the idea guy.
Meanwhile, we need to find a farmer that can take all the compost.
Oh, right. Which
to reuse it. So if anybody out there is a farmer, I have 500 pounds of compostable vegetable material.
Free.
Give me a call.
Free. You just got to go to Long
gotta
Island City
up.
And pick it up. How many farms are out on Long Island? Never mind, you know, my county alone, Nassau County, there's farms. You know, Suffolk County, forget it.
Where's Nassau County? Is that in Long Island?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's the two counties of Nassau, and then Suffolk is the east end. He's a Jersey
guy. I'm from Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania guy. Independence State, greatest
Independence
state
state
in the world. So I don't even know how to wrap up this show, except for the fact that you need to overall be more involved in what you're eating, and you need to put some effort into it.
And find a friend.
And find a friend. Introduce yourself around. And you know what? You're going to find if you send an email to a local farmer or a local business and ask, you know, hey, you make beer. You brew beer. A new brewery just opened in my town, Barrier Brewing. New. They've been around forever. They're finally coming into their own.
Nice.
You know what I'm going to do this afternoon? I'm going to send them an email and say, I'm a hunter. I have some connections. Can we set something up? I need beer. You give me beer, I give you venison. Right?
Yeah.
Very,
that's
very
a fair trade.
Very fair trade. So let's try to establish this as a society and try to, you know, do our small little part. Do we have anything else, Mike?
No, sounds good.
And I was only kidding, NSA. Don't come and investigate us. We're all cool. I love my country. I'm not doing anything. I disagree with some of your policies. So that's all the time we have today. I would like to thank Evan for producing and engineering today's show. You can always find archived episodes of The Wild Game Domain from the Hunt to the Hearth on heritageradionetwork.org or on iTunes as a podcast. Thank you, Brooklyn. Talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.